Book of the Week with Claire Armistead on guardian.co.uk.
This week's choice is The Empire Stops Here. It's a journey along the frontiers of the Roman world, and it's by Philip Parker. Now, this is a book that came into the office completely unheralded. I duly sent it out to one of my classical reviewers, Tom Holland, expecting him to take an 800-word trot around the Roman Empire, and instead he delivered a 1,300-word rave. He describes it, among other things, as an extraordinary book, a monument all of its own. Philip, that must please you.
It does indeed please me very much. I dedicated about 3 years of my life to writing it, and I hoped at the very least it would be my own personal monument, but for others to have compared it to some of the monumental buildings of the Roman Empire is very flattering indeed.
Only 3 years? I mean, it's a massive project.
I had the idea, probably the germ of the idea, about 10 years
ago.
Explain
what it is.
I had been looking at a simple map of the Roman Empire, the point at which it had reached and when they conquered which territory. And then I looked at the edges of the Roman Empire and I thought, there are places in Scotland, there are places in Germany, there are places in Romania and Syria and in North Africa. And not only were they all parts of the Roman Empire, but they were actually all on the edge of the Roman Empire. So it occurred to me they had a unique heritage that really cried out for exploration. So in each of the provinces of the Roman Empire, I looked at the general history and how the Romans came to be interested in the area, the process by which they conquered it, and then at the main sites which are actually there and the histories which are particularly associated with those sites, which have some wonderful stories which relate to central Roman history as well. It's a guide to history through travel, in a way. So by travelling both in terms of time and in terms of the geography and the sites, I thought that I would give a unique insight into the Roman Empire. 22 countries all together, which formed the frontiers of the Roman Empire.
And of course, you don't actually call them by their modern names in the books. You stick very much to their classical terminology.
I tried as far as possible to make a link between the ancient world and the modern world by giving them the classical titles. Of course, everywhere in the book I orient people so they know very well that Dacia is in Romania. But I thought it would help people get themselves underneath the skin of the subject just to retain those classical names.
Now, what sort of people do you expect to read it?
One of my abiding passions is the joint between history and travel. Very often I've been going somewhere and have had a travel guide and a history book and have felt not satisfied by either of them. So anybody who's not only interested in history but inspired by history and inspired by the places that one can still visit, those are the people I'm really aiming at.
Mm-hmm. So it's a large book. I mean, it's quite a big thing to put in your rucksack if you're travelling around ancient sites on foot, as you probably would have to for some of them.
Personally, I never travel with any less than half a dozen books. So I think with just one book, I'm really being rather modest in my requirements for people who they want to travel throughout the whole Roman Empire.
So now tell us a bit about just how big that Roman Empire was. I mean, we all of us have some idea of it, but it also has bits, parts that one isn't aware of. Like, I didn't know they were in Romania, for example.
The full extent of the Roman frontier, bearing in mind various kinks and little changes over time, is about 10,000 kilometres and covering 21 countries. Everybody in the United Kingdom is aware that Northern Britain was in the Roman Empire. But the frontier travels, snakes through Europe down the Rhine, through the Netherlands and Germany and Switzerland, and then across the Danube, throughout southern Germany, into Romania, Serbia, modern Bulgaria. And then in the Middle East, it encompasses Turkey, Syria and Jordan, and then almost all of the North African countries, Egypt, Libya, Tunisia, Algeria and Morocco. So a huge range of countries which today are extremely diverse and yet form part of a single political entity.
Mm. And you make the point that it was a huge empire, not just in terms of space, but in terms of time. And in fact, it's quite contentious. You have it down as continuing until the fall of Constantinople in the 15th century.
As far as the Romans were concerned, the empire carried on. When Rome fell, it was the loss of a province. The Eastern Roman Empire, which came to be centred on Constantinople after the 5th century, carried on. And the people there would always have considered themselves Romans. more than 1,000 years after the Roman Empire collapsed in Western Europe, they carried on controlling much of the Balkans and Asia Minor. And some of the monuments one can see and that I describe date from that period too, not from the traditional classical era, which most people think of when they're talking about the Romans.
Well, now you've got some absolutely lovely anecdotes. Did you make any discoveries?
I didn't physically unearth any new Roman site. However, what I think I did do is visit sites which people won't have visited. Some of my favourite sites are those which are not wholly inaccessible, but rather off the beaten track.
Like?
In the eastern desert of Egypt, only about an hour or two away from the diving resorts on the Red Sea coast at Hurghada, there are a couple of wonderful Roman sites which are mines right in the eastern desert. It's steamingly hot there, about 50 degrees in the shade. And the Romans came there to dig out porphyry, which is a purple stone which they particularly valued for their imperial statues, and also granite, which they used for many of their monumental buildings and temples. For them, it was really important to have these materials, and they built temples and buildings of their own right in the middle of the desert. It seems as if it's on a completely different world, and very few people visit it. And yet, were one to go on a diving holiday, 2 hours from there, there are these most amazing Roman sites.
You can actually get to them quite easily, can you?
If one said to one's hotel reception in Egypt, excuse me, I would like actually to visit the Roman granite mines at Mons Claudianus, somebody would be found with a jeep who could take you 2 hours into the desert and find it.
Now, you also talk about the Syrian nomads living around sort of potholes where they've been illegally excavating.
At various places on the frontier, one finds sites where people, over time, not just in the modern era, have decided that monumental ruins must be associated with treasure. The best example is in Petra, the treasury, which is the amazing temple front, which featured in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom, where at the top there's a stone trophy which has pockmarks in, and those were the Bedouin shot at it, because they physically thought that if they broke the trophy, out would come tumbling the magical gold, which they thought had belonged to the Egyptian pharaohs. They didn't know it was a Roman site. And one can still see those marks today.
Oh, gosh, so it's got layers and layers of history accreted on top of the history of the Romans.
There's not only the Roman history and our perception of the Romans. The Anglo-Saxons thought that Hadrian's Wall and the surviving Roman remains at the time must have been the work of giants. In the Middle East, the Bedouin thought that all of these remains must be associated with Pharaoh, who was this semi-mystical figure to whom anything not totally comprehensible was attributed. So people's response to the Roman past also plays a part in what I was trying to bring to people's, to readers' attention.
And of course, the Roman emperors were quite happy to be seen as pharaohs, weren't they? They were quite pragmatic about that sort of thing, weren't they?
In Egypt, they were happy to have themselves portrayed in the robes of pharaohs. They were happy to have their names written on in hieroglyphics on cartouches as the traditional pharaohs would have. They didn't impose a one-size-fits-all rule.
Now, this leads on a bit to the idea of archaeology by accident, which you talk about quite a lot, which is more to do with how some things are found and some things aren't found.
And this is particularly the case probably in the provinces of the Roman Empire, which are now less populated or in desert areas. It's easier to excavate. So in North Africa, one has in Libya the fantastic site of Leptis Magna. In Syria, one has the wonderful site of in Palmyra, whereas in cities which have thrived since then, one has relatively little. London was a Roman provincial capital, and yet not so much survives. One can get a distorted view of what was important in the Roman Empire and what was not by what survives.
Talk a bit about the discovery of the, what's it called, the Kaiser Augst, is it, in Switzerland?
It's a site in modern Switzerland. It was the largest and most important town on the bend between the Rhine and the Danube. And now it's got the largest Roman theatre in that part of the Roman Empire. It's got some fantastic temples. And yet, as late as the earlier 20th century, it was actually most of the site, in common with a lot of Roman sites, was used for agriculture. And one of the largest temples was actually pulled down by a farmer. And so the facade has been reconstructed with a wonderful canvas front.
But didn't he dig up a whole dinner service or something?
Yes. There's a late Roman fort. One winter, when the snow was lying rather deep, somebody who was just digging around in essentially what was the village green came across a trove of silver coins and silver plate. And these fantastic pieces of silver plate were just spirited away. some of the more honest local citizens returned them. And indeed, one particularly fine piece of silverware was actually discovered under the bed of a schoolboy.
There was another story that came out of that area, which was about the five human skeletons that were found in the shaft to a well house.
In the same area, there's an old Roman bathhouse, which was just essentially for a suburb. A couple of years ago, they dug around and found that there was an old well shaft down there. When they investigated, they found some human skeletons, but they also found associated with them some dies for making coins. And it's speculated that down there, it was a money forger's den.
We have this enormous civilization. What does it compare with in modern terms, in terms of the sheer scale of it? Is there anywhere now that is as big?
The Roman Empire probably had at least a third of the world's population. So one's struggling for a country which would have 2 billion people. So in terms of sheer numbers, one might compare it to the China of its day. But in terms of political reach, it controlled it. Probably at least half of what one might regard as the civilized world. One would have to be looking at something like the British Empire at its height to get some idea of the magnitude of its political and cultural control.
Oh, Philip, thank you very much for coming in, and I look forward to the next book.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for today's podcast. Until next week, goodbye.